Eddie, the Collegiate Freshman. Chapter 1. School Starts Yet Again, Part 2. The body for the third June buggy finally arrives, and Eddie gets working on it in the afternoons when he gets back from work. Having assembled three June buggies, Eddie can now get the job done quickly. All that's left to do is to drop the body on and install anything attached to the body, such as the lights, windshield wipers, and various accessories, which does not take too long. For Braden's June buggy, Eddie added a few additional accessories that are not found on Kathy's and Paula's June buggies. Progress moves along quickly, and in 1 week, Eddie completes the project. One afternoon, after installing the seats, Eddie drives to the service station to do the wheel alignment. Having already done two alignments, Eddie already knows the specs. Pulling into the station, Angelo gets a good look at Eddie's most recent project. Angelo yells out to Eddie, "Hey, is that one for me?" Eddie replies, "I can build one for you if you want." Eddie pulls the June buggy into the service bay and tells Angelo, "I need to do an alignment. The guy's getting it tomorrow." Angelo looks over the June buggy, noticing that it is meticulously assembled. Needless to say, Angelo is quite impressed with Eddie's work. Angelo goes back to work as Eddie begins the wheel alignment. When Eddie is finished, he asks Angelo, "Hey, do you want to take it for a spin?" Angelo figures why not and replies, "Sure." Angelo is almost done for the day, and if the June buggy looks that good, maybe it drives just as good as it looks. Eddie hands Angelo the keys, and Angelo takes it on a test drive. While Angelo is away, Eddie looks around the shop manning the station. Eddie contemplates that, someday, the station will be his. From what Eddie can remember, that will be in about 2 years, when Angelo moves back to Greece. Eddie also remembers that he partially paid for the station with gold, which he has acquired a lot of recently. Angelo returns from his test drive. Getting out of the June buggy, Angelo yells out, "Hey, this handles great." Eddie replies, "Yeah, I noticed that. It handles better than I ever expected. I think the guy will be happy with it." Angelo tells Eddie, "If he's not, let me know. I might want it." Eddie tells Angelo, "They are not hard to build. All you need is the frame, a rect 911, the body, and a VIN plate." Eddie adds, "Kurt did a really great job with the suspension angles. And the 911 front end and drivetrain drop right in." Angelo asks Eddie, "Can we put it up on the lift?" Eddie replies, "Sure." Angelo drives into an empty bay and gets out of the June buggy. Eddie lifts the vehicle and they take a look underneath. Looking at the rear end, Angelo comments, "Well, take a look at this. This is a 911 on a square steel frame." Angelo has heard about Kurt Richter's design, seen Kathy's and Paula's June buggies, but has never taken a close look. As Angelo examines the front end, Eddie comments, "It looks like you found the counterbalance weight." Angelo tells Eddie, "Yeah. If that wasn't there, it would understeer and pop a wheelie every time you take off." Eddie mentions, "The weight is 150 pounds, and I was wondering if that was enough, but apparently it is." Angelo points out, "The weight is positioned right behind the front suspension. If it was any farther back, the weight would have to be heavier. Any farther forward, and the car will handle like shit." After examining the underside, Angelo is even more impressed. Angelo tells Eddie, "I'd love to have one, but I really don't know what I'd do with it." Angelo tells Eddie, "Well, I'd better get back to work. Oh, and by the way, my stocks are doing great." Eddie reminds Angelo, "Since it's the end of the quarter, we need to sell some of them at the end of September." Angelo confidently replies, "Just let me know which ones and when." Angelo has made a lot of money in the stock market over the last year, courtesy of Eddie. Eddie drives home, where he will finish working on some last-minute details on Braden's June buggy. Over dinner, Kathy asks, "So, how are we going to give Brayden his June buggy?" Eddie suggests, "We could just bring it over to the campus and park it in our little corner of the lot." Kathy exclaims, "I like that idea. He'll be driving around in his police car, and he'll see it." Eddie comments, "Then, we can pretend like we have no idea where it came from." Kathy replies, "Yeah, right. He'll never believe that." Eddie mentions, "Who knows, though? He might not even see it." After cleaning up after dinner, Eddie drives Brayden's June buggy to the university. Kathy follows in her June buggy so she can bring Eddie home. Driving into the nearly empty parking lot, Eddie backs the vehicle into the parking space in the tribe's corner. Backing into a parking space is not legal to do on campus, but Eddie figures it might attract more attention from law enforcement that way. Kathy and Eddie drive home, wondering what tomorrow will bring. The next morning, Kathy heads to practice in her June buggy, followed by Eddie in his MGB. They plan to arrive early, not wanting to miss any surprises. When they arrive, no one else is remotely around. They decide to head inside and let the news spread in a natural way. Once they are finished getting dressed for practice, Kathy and Eddie meet in the arena. Sitting on the bleachers, they relax as the team slowly trickles in. When Mark and Paula arrive in the arena, Paula asks Eddie, "What's this?" "Brayden bought a June buggy." Eddie replies, "Well, not really." Paula asks Eddie, "How is that?" "His name is on it." Kathy tells Paula and Mark, "We're kind of giving it to him, but he doesn't know it yet." Paula exclaims, "Wow. Really? I don't want to miss that." Eddie comments, "We don't know if he's seen it yet or not. We brought it by last night." Mark asks, "Does anybody else know about it?" Eddie replies, "No. Just us." Kathy adds, "And anyone else who drove up this morning and saw it." Bobby B is the next member of the tribe to walk in. That means Erica is probably right behind him. Bobby B makes no mention of the June buggy that has Brayden's name on it. Perhaps his mind is elsewhere so early in the morning. Erica walks in a minute or so later, also making no mention of Brayden's June buggy. Brayden walks in next, taking a seat with the tribe. Mark looks at Eddie, who looks at Kathy. Kathy comments, "I guess he hasn't seen it yet." Eddie asks, "Who's going to tell him?" Mark suggests, "Why don't you tell him?" Bobby B asks, "What are you guys talking about?" Kathy replies, "It's in the parking lot. You must have missed it." Bobby B asks, "What's in the parking lot?" Kathy vaguely replies, "The June buggy." Brayden, hearing the conversation, chimes in, "Those are some fine-looking kick-ass June buggies Kathy and Paula have." Paula mentions, "There are three of them out there now." Brayden asks, "Whose is the other one?" Avoiding the question, Eddie replies, "The owner's name is on the back." Brayden asks, "Whose name is on the back?" Wondering how much time they have, Eddie asks Mark, "How much time until practice?" Mark replies, 15 minutes. Eddie tells Brayden, "Let's go and take a look." As Eddie, Kathy, Mark, and Paula walk out with Brayden, Barbara walks in and gives Brayden a high five. Brayden thinks Barbara is congratulating him on his fine performances over the last few weeks. Brayden thinks nothing special about the high five. But Barbara saw Brayden's June buggy when she drove in this morning. Johnson walks in next and heads to the bleachers. Kathy whispers to Eddie, "No one's figured it out yet." Eddie whispers to Kathy, "Barbara might have figured it out. I think that high five gave it away." When they get outside, Brayden can clearly see three June buggies parked side by side. As they get closer, the blue June buggy in the middle is backed in, so the name on the back is not immediately evident. Brayden exclaims, "Somebody got a blue one. Just take a look at that. That's a fine-looking June buggy." Brayden walks around the back and sees Brayden's kick as June Buggy painted on the back. Brayden looks at Eddie, who tosses Brayden the keys. Eddie tells Brayden, "It's yours, bro. We built it for you." Brayden, who is rarely at a loss for words, is speechless. Finally getting some words out, Brayden asks, "You mean, this June buggy is mine? It's for me." Kathy replies, "Yeah, it's all yours. And it's blue, just like you wanted." Brayden exclaims, "Wow. Thank you guys. I don't even know what to say." Brayden looks over the June buggy, which is a dark metallic blue. Eddie added a few police options, such as a small gumball-style light on the hood and a searchlight on the driver's side. Brayden's June buggy also has a two-way radio, just like Kathy's and Paula's June buggies. And, across the top, attached to the front windshield and rear roll bar is a bimini top with side windows that can roll down in the rain. Kathy's and Paula's also have a bimini top, but they prefer to drive with their tops off. Eddie jokingly tells Brayden, "I was cleaning up my garage, and I came across an extra June buggy. I thought you might like it." Brayden again tells Eddie, "Thank you guys so much. I don't even know what to say." Brayden comments, "Ain't no one ever given me anything like this before." Eddie gives Brayden a brotherly hug, telling him, "You deserve it, bro." Kathy also gives Brayden a hug, telling him, "Now, you and Wendy can go and get pizza whenever you want." Kathy is glad to see Brayden so happy with his gift. They all head back inside, walking in slightly late. But the meeting has not officially started yet since the coaches have yet to arrive. Leggett, however, finds it fit to comment, "Wow. These guys think they are perfect, or something." Raising his voice, Brayden tells Leggett, "I ain't perfect. I admit it. My biggest fault is I don't know how good I really am. When I look in the mirror, sometimes I ask myself, am I really this good? Then, when I finally come to my senses, I tell myself, I am the greatest ass kicker of all time." Everyone in the area laughs and cheers, as Brayden clearly puts Leggett in his place. It's not hard for anyone to tell that Brayden is in an elated mood today. With the team in the arena and ready to go, the head coach, Dr. Braun, walks in, along with Dr. Paxton, the distance coach, Coach Herndon, the sprinting coach, and Dr. Bonamo, the field events coach. Seeing the coaches walking in, the team heads over to the bleachers, and everyone takes a seat. The tribe all sits together, and there's some whispering about Brayden's new June buggy. Dr. Braun, the head coach, blows his whistle, getting everyone's attention. Dr. Braun tells everyone, "Before we head out to the track, I have a few announcements to make. First, since the weather is nice today, we are all heading out to the sand track and running sprints with the training sled. For the first 45 minutes, the sprinters will be on the sled and the distance group will be doing the interval drill. Then, for the next 45 minutes, we will swap." Mitchell, Akinmola, and Stone are particularly glad to hear that they will be using the training sled today. An unofficial competition has arisen among the three distance stars. Continuing with his announcements, Dr. Braun informs his team, "Tonight, at 7 p.m., our campus radio station will be airing the program Waves. For those of you who don't know, Waves is a program in which students who are making waves on campus are interviewed. Tonight, Angela Meadows, the host, will be interviewing Eddie Bogenskaya. I suggest that you take the time out and listen to the program. Who knows, one of you may be next on Angela's list to be interviewed. So, tonight at 7 p.m., tune into 89.1 on the FM dial. And, I might add, many of the faculty members routinely listen to the campus radio station." The group cheers, many of them apparently having no idea that Eddie will be on the radio tonight. Now that he is finished with the announcements, Dr. Braun tells everyone, "Okay. Let's get out there and get to work." The distance team heads out with Dr. Paxton, and the sprinters head out with Coach Herndon. On the way out of the arena, many of Eddie's teammates give him a high five for his radio interview. Braden asks Eddie, "Is there a radio in my dune buggy?" Eddie replies, "Yeah. It has an AM, FM stereo, and a two-way radio." Braden tells Eddie, "Good. I'm gonna sit in my dune buggy and listen to the show tonight." On the way out to the track, Braden takes a slight detour to take another peek at his dune buggy. Braden can't wait until practice is over so that he can take it out on a drive. When Braden rejoins the group, Eddie tells him, "The only thing that you have to be concerned about is that the dune buggy is way overpowered. It has a Porsche 911 engine, but weighs half as much as a 911. It does 0 to 60 in 5 seconds or less. And remember, it will go 140 miles per hour, but I wouldn't take it that fast." Braden replies, "You won't have to worry about that. I might be fast on the track, but on the road, I'm kind of slow." Arriving at the sand track, the sprinters begin their workout. With 4 training sleds, Eddie is among the first group, along with Mark, Braden, and Johnson. Braden glances over at McCutcheon, who is going bald, and asks, "Yo, Junior, where's all your hair going? What's wrong with your head?" Answering for McCutcheon, Mark tells Braden he's going bald. "It's a delayed effect of getting bit by a prickly sea spider. He won't listen to me." Paula comments, "Yeah. It's the South African prickly sea spiders that cause that. They are really bad." Kathy whispers to Paula, "What's up with him? Pretty soon, he's going to look like Mr. Freeze." The runners all sprint down the sand track, leaving McCutcheon wondering whether Mark is actually right. While the guys are headed down the sand track, Paula pulls Kathy aside and tells her, "McCutcheon is going bald because, okay, so get this. Mark bought a bottle of the same shampoo McCutcheon uses, and he mixed hair removal gel in with it. And, a week ago, when McCutcheon wasn't looking, Mark swapped shampoo bottles. Now, all of his hair is falling out." Kathy laughs hysterically and exclaims, "No. Tell me he didn't. You've got to be kidding me." Paula tells Kathy, "Yeah, he did. And that will teach that asshole a lesson for crashing my wedding." Kathy gives Paula a high five and exclaims, "Good one." They then rejoin the sprinters, waiting for their turn. When the guys return, they get a break, and some of the other sprinters take a turn. The rotation gets into a good rhythm, but Mark notices that McCutcheon has not been taking a turn. After all, according to Mark, using the training sled after getting a prickly sea spider bite causes tendons to tear and fall apart. So, Mark decides not to comment and allows McCutcheon's physical fitness to deteriorate simply by not working out. Apparently, McCutcheon has swallowed the prickly sea spider story hook, line, and sinker. And after McCutcheon crashed Mark and Paula's wedding, Mark would be glad to get rid of him. So would Paula. After their 45 minutes on the sled, the sprinters head over to the track to run the interval training drill. The distance team heads over to the sand track, with some of them anxious to run the drills with the training sled. While they are waiting, Braden is staring out into the parking lot, counting down the minutes until he gets to take a drive in his dune buggy. Although Braden is fast, time runs very slowly for anyone when a new vehicle awaits you after practice. The runners perform the all-too-familiar drill. For most of the drill, the tribe runs together. During one of their recovery laps, Mark comments to Eddie, "Check out McCutcheon. He hasn't sprinted a single lap yet. He's slacking off." Paula adds, "Yeah. It's South African prickly sea spider syndrome. He's definitely sick." Kathy tells Paula, "Once all his hair falls out, he'll have a really aerodynamic head." Eddie asks, "What's up with that, anyway?" Paula tells Eddie, "I'll tell you once this next group passes us." Waiting until no one can hear them, Paula tells everyone, "Okay, it's got to be a tribe secret. Eddie replies, no problem with that. Braden comments, I got to hear this one. Checking once again that no one else is around, Paula explains, okay, so Mark bought a bottle of the same shampoo brand McCrutchen uses, and he mixed hair removal gel in with it. And when McCrutchen wasn't looking, Mark swapped shampoo bottles. Kathy adds, and so that's why McCrutchen's going bald. Eddie laughs, gives Mark a high five, and tells him, that's your best one yet. Mark replies, that's what he gets for crashing my wedding. With it being time to sprint again, the tribe drops to the inside of the track and sprints for 440 yards. McCutcheon, however, has been jogging around the track all morning. When practice comes to a close, Braden is the first to hit the locker room. Showering and changing in record time, Braden is more than ready to try out his June buggy. All during his shower, Braden is energetically exclaiming, "Gonna try out my new June buggy." Braden's kick as June buggy is getting on the road. Every guy on the track team now knows that Braden has a new June buggy. In fact, nearly every one of the team members wants to see Braden's new June buggy, so they head out to the parking lot with him. Out in the parking lot, Braden's June buggy becomes the center of attention. Everyone, to say the least, is quite impressed. One team member, referring to Kathy's, Paula's, and Braden's June buggies, comments, all three of these look identical. Kathy informs him, they are. Me and Eddie built all three of them. Once everyone has had their look, Braden jumps in and starts the engine. The characteristic sound of the 911 engine starting is one of unmistakable power, surprising everyone standing around. Braden exclaims, here I go. Braden, with the biggest smile one could imagine, cautiously drives through the parking lot. As Braden drives away, Kathy tells Eddie, I think he likes it. Everyone heads to their classes, including McCutcheon, who came outside to check out Braden's new toy. McCutcheon, who stood back watching from a distance, is quite puzzled. Wondering how this group, all originally from Northside High School, not only seems to rule the track, but the world as well. The wheels begin to turn in McCutcheon's head, again likely coming to all the wrong conclusions. And with the rumors of another group of athletes coming up next year from Northside, McCutcheon wonders how such great success by a select few can even be possible. McCutcheon realizes that what he saw while he was in high school was only the tip of the iceberg. Returning to campus an hour later, Braden is more than happy with his June buggy. Braden parks his June buggy at the campus police station, which is a 2,500 square foot building with a radio tower and parking lot in the rear. Braden figures his June buggy will be safe in the law enforcement lot. Braden then heads off to class, resuming his life as a student, at least for a while. As the end of the autumn practice season draws near, the university athletes await the announcement of which events they will be running during the upcoming season. To some, the announcement will come as no surprise. Yet, to others, a big surprise, good or bad, might redefine their destiny. It's no secret to anyone that the 4x440 relay team, comprising of Eddie, Mark, Braden, and Johnson, will remain together. With a composite time in the 1 mile event of just over 3 minutes, they are unbeatable. And it's no secret that the performance of certain athletes has been below par. But, as in previous seasons, they perhaps expect to rely on reputation rather than performance. The clock, however, cares not about one's reputation, only performance. On the morning of the expected announcement, Eddie and the tribe take a seat together on the bleachers. Barbara, in 50 words or less, fills the tribe in on what they should expect today. Today's meeting will amount to a 20-minute dissertation on who will run in each event, a brief pep talk, followed by a practice session where everyone will talk about the results while they train. Eddie and the tribe are ready. They all expect good news. While they are waiting, Mark, fully knowing the answer, comments, why is McCrutcheon always wearing that hat? Eddie replies, it's getting colder out. He only functions between 68 and 72 degrees. McCutcheon is now fully bald, and the doctors at the campus infirmary cannot seem to find out why. They've attributed McCutcheon's condition to stress, which could make his hair fall out. But so could a depilatory, which is used to intentionally remove hair. Much to everyone's surprise, the Dean of Students, Dean Addison Grimsby, is present at today's team meeting. The Dean tuned into the program Waves when it was aired earlier in the semester and heard Eddie's interview with Angela Meadows. Wanting to get a first-hand look at the university's track team, Dean Grimsby takes a seat on the bleachers along with the team. The Dean is very interested in who will be running in which event. Today, along with the team, he will find out. Dr. Braun walks in along with the other coaches. Silence falls over the arena, somewhat analogous to the silence in the classroom during the final exams that some of the students are taking this week. Dr. Braun announces, "Wow. You guys are all quiet today. I can't imagine why." Dr. Braun is not stupid. He knows the student athletes are all nervous. Today, they are getting their grades for their last 10 weeks of work, which are their event assignments. He also knows some athletes will be jubilant, yet others will not be happy campers. But, nevertheless, he will be delivering news that is intended to benefit the team as a whole, and not any specific individual. Before he begins, Dr. Braun mentions, "I see we have Dean Grimsby with us here today. Please give a warm welcome to our Dean of Students." Dean Grimsby waves to the team, and the team members clap, welcoming the administrator. Dr. Braun is wondering why the Dean is present today. Eddie whispers to Kathy, "I was wondering who the suit was." Dr. Braun then announces, "I know you've been waiting, so without further ado, here is the lineup to start off the season. And remember, everything is subject to change. The athletes are not stupid either. They all know that, if they do not perform, they will be pulled from whatever event they are deficient." While Dr. Braun announces each individual and their events, he occasionally may also make comments regarding their performance over the last semester of training. The meaning behind these comments is clear. And if they don't know the intended meaning behind the comments, they certainly will by the end of today's practice session. Dr. Braun begins, announcing, "Okay, here we go. First, the women. Kathy, the 40-yard dash, the 220-yard dash, and the mile medley relay. Paula, you will also be running the 40-yard dash, the 220-yard dash, and the mile medley relay. You've got to really hand it to these two women. They have been undefeated for the last 2 years. Then, we come to Barbara. Wow, Barbara. Barbara is the number one woman in the division in the mile, and possibly in the country this year. Barbara, you will be running the mile, 880-yard run, and the mile medley relay. Erica, you will be running the 440-yard dash, and the mile medley relay. And I'm going to step out on a limb here, and also assign you to the 220-yard dash." By putting Erica in the 220-yard dash, Dr. Braun is putting her up against the toughest competition she could possibly encounter. Erica knows that, and she doesn't care. Once Dr. Braun is finished assigning the rest of the women to their events, he moves on to the men. The 23 women on the team seem to be happy with their assignments. Moving on to the men, Dr. Braun announces, "Now, for the men. The men's team is looking a lot better this year. Eddie, you will be running the 40-yard dash, the 220-yard dash, the 4x440 relay, and the mile medley relay. Mark, you will also be running the 40-yard dash, the 220-yard dash, the 4x440 relay, and the mile medley relay. In the mile medley relay, Eddie and Mark will be running the 220-yard legs. I'll let you guys decide who leads off." By allowing Eddie and Mark to decide who will lead off is the biggest compliment they could receive by the coach. Moving on, Dr. Braun announces, "Axel Braden, who I understand is our chief as kicker, will be running the 440-yard dash. Dr. Braun has to wait for the applause to settle down following his comment. Continuing, Dr. Braun announces, Axel Braden, you will also be running the 4x440 relay and the mile medley relay. In the mile medley relay, you will be running the 440-yard leg, but you've probably already guessed that. And for those of you who don't know, Eddie, Mark, and Axel are all about 1 or 2 seconds off the world record in the 440-yard dash. Applause rises again as Dr. Braun gives recognition to a job well done. Dr. Braun then announces, I can put Eric Johnson in just about any event and expect him to come out with a win. Eric will be running the half mile, the mile, the 4x440 relay, and the mile medley relay. In the mile medley relay, Johnson will be taking the 880-yard leg. Johnson is glad to hear the compliment given to him by Dr. Braun. Although Johnson's times are not quite as fast as Eddie, Mark, or Braden, he is highly competent at any distance. Coming to Hoffa, Dr. Braun announces, Hoffa, you'll be running the 40-yard dash, the 220-yard dash, and, as you've requested, the 440-yard dash. Hoffa, for some reason, wants to dethrone Leggett from the 440-yard dash. That should not be too hard for him to do. But the flip side is that Hoffa is simply not going to beat Braden in that race. Moving on to the distance team, Dr. Braun compliments Mitchell, stating, Gary Mitchell, you really surprised me. You'll be running the mile, the 880-yard run, and the 4x880 relay, and anything else you want to run. Daryl Stone, you'll also be running the mile, the 880-yard run, and the 4x880 relay. And Adekunle Akinmola, you've also surprised me. You'll be running the mile, the 880-yard run, and the 4x880 relay. Dr. Braun continues making assignments to the 28 members of the men's team. Coming to Leggett, Dr. Braun announces, Leggett, you'll be running the 440-yard dash, and you'll be an alternate in the 40-yard dash. If you think you can handle it, I'd like to give you a shot at the 4x880 relay. Leggett was offered the position in the 4x880 relay, and perhaps some other distance events, by Dr. Paxton. Making today's offer is Dr. Braun's way of telling Leggett that he has lost some confidence in him as a sprinter. Leggett takes the challenge and replies, sure, I'll go for it. Leggett will have to step up his game. If he doesn't perform, he will be replaced. Leggett is glad to take the challenge. Mitchell, Akinmola, and Stone, however, are not too happy to hear the news that Leggett will be on the 4x880 relay team. Coming to McCutcheon, Dr. Braun announces, Todd McCutcheon, you'll be one of my alternates. Your events will vary from meet to meet. Assigning a runner to be an alternate is a nice way of telling them that they are less than competent on the track and that they will not be competing. An alternate is someone who will fill in for another runner in a race if, for some reason, that runner cannot run. For example, if a runner is injured, an alternate will take their place. Hearing the news, Braden comments, I'm glad to hear that. I was hoping I wouldn't have to shove that baton up his flimsy ass. In the field events, no announcements are made. There is no question who will be participating in which events. High jumpers don't seem too good at the shot put. And it's not likely that anyone will be seeing Bobby B, high jumping or pole vaulting. There are, however, a lot of people, Eddie and Mark included, who would love to see Bobby B pole vault. But that's not going to happen anytime soon. After the announcement, most of the 28 men are satisfied with their assignments. After the announcements, Dr. Paxton privately mentions to Dr. Braun, it's clear that McCutcheon isn't working out too well as a sprinter. He has, however, turned in a few good times in the 440-yard dash. If you don't mind, I'd like to give him a chance with the distance team. Who knows? Maybe he'll work out. Dr. Braun replies, sure. Give it a try. But do this for me. Let McCutcheon and Leggett continue to work out with the sprinters during the daily workouts, and let him do his distance work on his own. Coach Herndon has been doing a good job cracking the whip with both of them. I just don't want them to get any lazier than they already are. Maybe there'll be a place for him someday. Dr. Paxton smiles and tells Dr. Braun, you got a deal. Dr. Braun is at a loss about what to do with McCutcheon. McCutcheon's times are erratic. He bungles handoffs. And Dr. Braun has clearly noticed that McCutcheon has been slacking off. Perhaps Dr. Paxton is right, thinking both McCutcheon and Leggett might be a little better at running distance. Today, the practice session is held in the indoor arena. The runners' times are already well documented in their individual events. But the performance of the assigned relay teams is not quite as clear. With the relay teams finalized, Dr. Braun will be gauging their performance on the 220-yard track. After today, the coaches will all know exactly where they stand. While the events are being organized, the tribe has a brief celebration, exchanging high fives, fist bumps, and hugs. Celebrating with the tribe is Stone, who is glad to see some newer talent come to the team this year. The coaches see the celebration, wondering why the rest of the team does not have the same excitement. The women's mile medley team is called to the track to perform. Eddie tells Kathy, good luck, as he sits back to relax. Mark also sits back with his legs crossed, wondering if he will be running today. Braden and Johnson join them as they watch the women perform. For some reason, McCutcheon takes a seat near the tribe, but keeps a safe distance. Mark, however, knows the reason McCutcheon has moved. McCutcheon has nothing better to do than to listen in on the tribe's conversations. Knowing exactly what McCutcheon is up to, Mark asks Braden, so, how's the June buggy running? Braden replies, awesome. Me and Wendy took it out a few times to get pizza. Then, we took a couple of trips to her parents' house, and my parents, mostly over the weekends. It's nice to be able to get around. Mark tells Braden, awesome, bro. When the spring comes, you guys can hit the beach with us. Braden accepts Mark's offer, telling him, we'd love to. I'll have to bring an umbrella for Wendy, though. Wendy is as fair-skinned as one can get, and burns easily in the sun. Since it's getting a little cooler outside, Eddie tells Braden, by the way, June buggies don't have heaters. Braden asks, they don't. Eddie replies, no, they don't. They are not for people who can't take it when the temperature gets outside of 68 to 72 degrees. Eddie's comment was fully intended to irritate McCutcheon, which it does. Braden exclaims, that's okay. I'm tough. I can take it. Mark comments, there's no reason why the cold and the heat should keep us from doing things. Coming up with an idea, Braden tells everyone, and now I know what I'm getting Wendy for Christmas. Eddie asks, what's that? Braden replies, a ski suit. Eddie comments, that's a good idea, bro. I'm sure she'd like that. Dr. Braun calls up the men's mile medley relay team, which consists of Eddie, Mark, Braden, and Johnson. Braden stands up and exclaims, I'm back on the track. I'm gonna kick someone's ass and turn it into grass. Braden has certainly been fired up. Mark, with his playful personality, asks Eddie, heads or tails? Eddie replies, heads. Without a coin in sight, Mark tells Eddie, sorry, bro. It was tails. You lead off. Being duped by Mark, Eddie laughs and replies, no problem. For some reason, Mark wanted to run the second leg. Eddie takes the baton and waits for the buzzer. The buzzer is sounded and Eddie is out of the blocks, running the first 220-yard leg. Mark gets onto the track and points directly at McCutcheon. McCutcheon catches Mark's eye, and Mark makes a few gestures, such as pointing and running in place. It is now clear why Mark wanted to run this leg. Last year, the second leg of this race belonged to McCutcheon, who ran it in a dismal 35 seconds. Eddie approaches the transition zone and hands off to Mark. Mark takes off, proving to everyone that McCutcheon is not worth his salt. Mark takes about 23 seconds to finish his lap and hands off to Braden. The energy from Braden's verbal excitement is now channeled through his legs. Braden turns in the expected performance, covering 440 yards in the 46-second range. Braden hands off to Johnson, who ran the 440-yard leg in this race last year. This year, Johnson is the anchorman, running 880 yards. Since he and Barbara have been working out together, Johnson prefers to run distances of 880 yards and above. While Johnson is running his leg, Eddie and Mark take a seat on the bleachers. Braden walks off his run and heads over to join them. Eddie asks Kathy, "Do you know what the mile medley team ran last year?" Kathy replies, "A mile." Eddie and everyone else around laughs. Eddie tells Kathy, "Well, that's a good one. First Mark gets me, and now you." Mark tells Eddie that means she doesn't know how fast they ran. Mark then tells Kathy, "Thanks. I'm going to use that one someday." Although she has many statistics in her head, Kathy cares little about any race McCutcheon was in. About to finish his last lap, Johnson knows he's on the clock. Sprinting to the finish, Johnson is glad to get this race over. He knows he ran well, and he knows the relay team had a great run. Walking off his run, he heads to the bleachers to await the relay team's time. Approaching the tribe, Johnson passes by McCutcheon and tosses the baton to him. McCutcheon tries to catch the baton, fumbles with it, then drops it, causing a bit of laughter from the tribe. Johnson takes a seat, receiving high fives and fist bumps from his relay team and the tribe. The announcement is made by Dr. Braun. The composite time of the mile medley team was 3 minutes, 21.3 seconds. The individual times were all exemplary. Okay, let's get the men's 4x880 relay out on the track. Eddie comments, "He didn't tell us our times." All bubbly, Kathy replies, "That's because your times were all exemplary. See? You wanted all A's, and you're getting them." Eddie tells Kathy, "Wow. You're in a good mood today." Kathy tells Eddie, "That's because we're all back together again." Kathy then informs Eddie, "Don't worry. The timekeepers have your times. You'll find out later." Seeing the success of the tribe, McCutcheon becomes irate. While the 4x880 relay is underway, the tribe overhears McCutcheon disputing Dr. Braun's assignment decisions with Coach Herndon. McCutcheon asks Coach Herndon, "Can't I just run in one of the sprints?" Coach Herndon explains, "To qualify for an event, you must be in the top 3 or 4 in that event during time trials. Your times were simply not competitive enough this year. Awards are only given for first, second, and third place. Assigning an athlete to an event that they are not competitive at is somewhat pointless." McCutcheon, displaying his anger, asks Coach Herndon in a demanding tone, "How come I was good enough last year, but not this year?" Getting frustrated with McCutcheon, Coach Herndon explains, "There are a few athletes new to the team who are a lot faster than you are. You're an alternate. Deal with it." McCutcheon takes a seat, knowing exactly why he is an alternate this year. After practice, everyone heads to the locker room. Mark sees McCutcheon heading to the shower, wondering why, since McCutcheon didn't even run today. Noticing McCutcheon's special bottle of shampoo is nearly empty, Mark decides to have mercy on McCutcheon. Mark tells McCutcheon, "I know you're not going to believe me, but if you're bald because of a prickly sea spider bite, your hair will start coming back again soon. The baldness only lasts about 3 months. McCutcheon asks Mark, oh yeah. How do you know all this? Making up a bunch of bull, Mark replies, when I was in 10th grade, in biology class, we had to write a 3-page paper on an organism. Mine was on the prickly sea spider. So, I read a lot about them. Finally walking away with some encouraging news, McCutcheon has something to look forward to. With more finals ahead of them this week, the team will be very busy in the academic realm. Well, except for Eddie, Mark, Bobby B., Stone, and perhaps a few others. During final exam week, Eddie will be at Angelo's service station working. Mark and Bobby B. will be completing a few final details of the landscaping at Mark's house. And Stone will be playing a few gigs over the next month. At the high school, the end of the autumn semester brings the annual faculty Christmas party, which is traditionally held in the teacher's lounge. In past years, Mr. Crum has been the recipient of a few gifts that have been quite embarrassing. This year, Mr. Crum is again very apprehensive, and justifiably so. Mr. Crum thinks that, if he does receive any gifts, he will not open them in front of everyone. Mr. Crum is becoming just as paranoid about Christmas gifts as he is about the legal system. As the physical education staff is getting ready to attend the party, Mr. Zunday asks Mr. Fraser, by the way, is Edda's other track medal still in the office? Mr. Fraser replies, to be honest, I've completely forgotten about that. Let me check. Mr. Fraser searches his desk drawer where the medal was and does not find it. After looking in a few other places, Mr. Fraser tells Mr. Zunday, it's gone. I don't see it anywhere. Mr. Zunday informs Mr. Fraser, well, at least we have the heads up on what Mr. Crum will be getting this year for Christmas. Mr. Fraser replies, I can't wait. Mr. Zunday and Mr. Fraser head to the party, looking forward to the entertainment that awaits. During the party, Mr. Crum is actually attempting to act sociable, and for a very good reason. He has found out that there is a present under the tree with his name on it, and that the gift giver is Mr. Brian, who is Mr. Crum's buddy. Mr. Crum figures that he is safe this year, and happily mingles with the crowd. The word that Mr. Brian gave Mr. Crum his sole present under the tree gets back to Mr. Fraser and Mr. Zunday. Mr. Fraser and Mr. Zunday are now sure that one of the students or a faculty member must have stolen the medal. They have also figured out that it is unlikely that Mr. O'Brien actually gave Mr. Crum the present, but, instead, Mr. O'Brien's name was craftily written as the gift giver as a joke. When it comes time to open the presents, Mr. Chubin takes it upon himself to distribute all the gifts. When it comes time for Mr. Crum to open his present, he proudly unwraps it, knowing that he is safe this year because he and Mr. O'Brien are buddies. Inside, Mr. Crum finds another gold medal hung on a blue ribbon. Having a good idea what the present might be, Miss Hamilton and Miss Paterno get up out of their seats and walk over to get a good look. Taking a close look at the medal, Miss Hamilton starts laughing, seeing another beautifully crafted medal that has been modified. This year's medal depicts a high relief image of a runner's ass, with a leg and foot kicking the ass. The unneeded body parts have been removed from the runners, and it appears that a leg has been removed and repositioned to kick the ass. The work again appears very professionally done and polished to perfection. Mr. Fraser, Mr. Zunday, and Mr. Chubin rush over to get a closer look. Seeing the medal, and pretending to believe that Mr. O'Brien is the gift giver by the name on the tag, Mr. Zunday tells Mr. Crum, at least you know who has been giving you these presents. Mr. Zunday clearly knows that Mr. O'Brien lacks any of the technical or artistic skills needed to modify the medal. If you ask Mr. Zunday, he will tell you that Mr. O'Brien is not even qualified to get out of bed in the morning. And even if Mr. O'Brien could modify the medal, he would not be able to get anywhere near the physical education office. Mr. Crum, not so sure that Mr. O'Brien gave him the medal, exclaims, he did not. I am going to find out who is behind this. Mr. Fraser thinks back to last year, when Mr. Zunday mentioned If there was a foot on the metal about to kick that ass, I would suspect Braden. But he's graduated. So, it must have been Mr. O'Brien. Mr. Fraser also thinks back to who was present when Mr. Zunday made that comment, but cannot recall exactly who was standing around. Mr. Fraser has brilliantly deduced that it is a teacher who is responsible for crafting Mr. Crumb's present this year. Miss Amherst and Miss Starr do not want to be left out of the action. Miss Amherst asks Mr. Crumb, "May I see that, please?" Mr. Crumb shakes his head and hands the medal to Miss Amherst. Upon seeing Mr. Crumb's medal, Miss Starr and Miss Amherst both burst out laughing. Miss Amherst exclaims, "This one is even better than last year's." Mr. Crumb brazenly tells Miss Amherst, "It sounds like you might know who did this." Miss Amherst cordially replies, "Actually, I don't have the slightest clue. But you have to admit, it is kind of funny." Miss Amherst hands the medal back to Mr. Crumb, but Mr. Crumb refuses to accept it. He'd rather not be in possession of this year's less than thoughtful gift. Since Mr. Crumb does not want his medal back, Mr. Zunday asks Miss Amherst, "Do you mind if I keep that?" Miss Amherst replies, "No. Not at all. Here, take it." After the party, the entire physical education staff heads back to the athletic office before they go home. Mr. Zunday asks them all, "Would any of you know who is behind Mr. Crumb's award?" Mr. Fraser comments, "I really wish I knew who it was." Miss Paterno adds, "Yeah, me too. They are getting better every year." Mr. Chubin casually asks, "I wonder what would happen if someone found out." Mr. Zunday replies, "Well, if it is a teacher, I'm sure Mr. Crumb would have something to say. But since you guys don't report to him any longer, you're all in the clear. And honestly, I can't exactly see Dr. Brooks being bothered with this. In fact, she'd probably think it's as funny as we do." Miss Hamilton suddenly comments, "I know who it is." Mr. Zunday asks, "Oh, really? Who might that be?" Miss Hamilton explains, "Last year, we all were laughing at Mr. Crumb's medal. Someone, however, conspicuously commented, 'Nice work.' Before anything else is said, Mr. Chubin remarks, 'I'm busted. Guilty as guilty gets. And before you ask, yes, I'm responsible for the certified mail sent to Mr. Crumb from the law firm Goda, Helen, Bark, and Burnham last year too." The other gym teachers give Mr. Chubin a high five, reassuring him that his secret is safe. The rumor around school among the students is that Mr. Chubin is a little on the crazy side. With the athletic students, Mr. Chubin pushes them beyond their athletic limits, developing their abilities even further. As a cross-country coach, Mr. Chubin always has a winning season, and the team is often undefeated. His inherent personality, however, can be quite intimidating to the students who have below-par athletic ability, often pushing them beyond their emotional limits. Apparently, Mr. Chubin is also good at pushing Mr. Crumb beyond his emotional limits. And Mr. Chubin's brother is a jeweler.